Marty Moss Cohen, welcome back to Radio Times. The U.S. Conference of Mayors passed a resolution at their annual meeting last month telling the federal government that states should decide their own marijuana policies without interference. It cited studies showing that almost half of the population has used marijuana, enforcement has been expensive and ineffective, and reiterated its call to reclassify marijuana. The conference had declared the war on drugs a failure 6 years ago, calling for a more health-oriented approach. We asked the mayor of Reading, Pennsylvania, Vaughn Spencer, to join us. The city of 88,000 has been dealing with the problems associated with a high rate of poverty, including drugs. And Mayor Spencer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Well, it's glad to be able to participate, Marty.
So help us understand what the U.S. Conference of Mayors, what this resolution means and where it came from.
Well, it came from the chairman of the Marijuana Majority, which is a caucus group within mayors within the U.S. Conference of Mayors. And, what it's saying is that, you know, that states and mayors at local levels tend to have a better pulse of their state and their communities within their state, and that the federal government needs to work more with them with respect to ideas and suggestions, in this case, the use of marijuana, that they feel as though they have a better outlook as to how it should be handled, and also the fact that it's something that, the constituents, whether it's a city within a state that has pass this legislation, or whether it's the state itself, to better be in a position to determine its own destiny.
You know, I have to say, reading the resolution and all the whereases in that resolution, it seemed like the mayors, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, was really pointing a finger at the federal government and was criticizing the federal government for interference. Would that be your reading of the resolution as well?
Absolutely. They're citing, and of course, I wasn't at the annual conference, but we do get correspondence and our ASR positions on various things. But that's exactly what they're saying. They're saying that instead of the resources being used to fight, in this case, the war of marijuana use, that those resources might be better used by states and by local governments with federal allocations to address some of the other issues that states and cities are dealing with.
And how do you deal with marijuana in Reading?
Mm-hmm. Well, here in Reading, obviously we see it as an entry-level drug, which I believe everybody else looks at it in that perspective. But if we had to rate which types of drugs are having the greatest impact on us, I would say we've had a lot of heroin use, cocaine, meth, meth labs in around our area or our region. They seem to be the ones that are impacting greatly on us. Now, that's not to minimize how some people see marijuana being an entry level to other drug uses. But as far as fighting a war on drugs, as I mentioned to a lot of people, we had a program that was called the Route 222 Corridor Initiative that the federal government had sponsored or supported, I should say, a number of years ago. And that was to work amongst the cities like Easton, Bethlehem, Allentown, Reading, and York,
sure,
where a lot of this major drug trafficking was taking place. And I'm talking about heroin and cocaine and meth, pretty much. And when those funds were used up, there has not been an effort by the federal government to fund it again. And that's a tool that worked well for us. And so that, again, goes to speak to the argument. What you got to allow local municipalities and states to be able to look at their particular issue and to focus on what has the greatest impact on them. And we're in a better position to deal with that, us and our law enforcement organization.
And since we're talking about marijuana here, and you were also talking about heroin and meth, do you think, even from your experience as the mayor of Reading, that it would make sense within your city to treat marijuana differently? As you said, you see it as an entry-level drug, but do you think it would also make sense to see it as something that needs a different kind of policy?
I could see that. I know that we hear the arguments related to marijuana use for medicinal purposes, and research that has indicated that there has a value there. Whether or not marijuana usage reaches the level of the other types of drugs, as I said, that we're dealing with right now. I mean, we take all drug usage serious. However, most of our issues, and I'm talking about the city of Reading,
right,
are more of the other, the heroines, the cocaines, the meths out in our county area. That seems to be the biggest trafficking things. We have incidences of marijuana, but I would say it's the other ones that impact us a lot more.
And I'm curious about, just as you deal with the issue of drugs within the city of Reading, how much is that costing you? And I'm thinking about police and incarceration and all that goes along with that. Is that a big ticket item for you?
Our police budget runs anywhere between $22 million to $26 million the years that I've served as council president. The incarceration aspect of it, our county is responsible for our prisons. I do know that we had issues of overcrowdedness in our counties, and they're looking at ways in which to provide space for the more serious crimes and those what they consider lesser offenses, mm-hmm. looking at some other way of triaging that. But the cost is always there because, any time that you're doing an investigation, a sting operation, I mean, that generally occurs many times with overtime hours and the impact of overtime on a city like Reading that has a structural deficit is big. Now, we can't just walk away from it. We have to still provide the resources that our citizens expect. But again, it does present a budgetary problem for the administration and council.
Reading is, what, about 88,000 people living in Reading?
Yeah, according to the last census, it was 88,000. We believe we have more than 88,000 in our city. We often refer to kind of the hidden population that many cities deal with, We do have a number of undocumented people that we know inhabit our city, depending upon if they get caught in a particular crime situation, they're detained and possibly deported by the federal government. But I would venture to say we have more than 88,000, but that's the official count.
I also read officially that Reading is, what, the poorest city of a certain size in the country? Do I have that right?
Well, I think it was 2 years ago. Yes, we had that designation of for a city of 65,000 people or above. That at that time we were rated as the poorest city. I think Flint, Michigan, was second.
Yeah,
and then they went on to name a number of other cities. The latest poll that was taken related to that, we were number six. So, I mean, we went from number one to number six, but we're still in the top 10, which is something that obviously we want to change.
Well, obviously, but I wonder how much just the poverty in Reading is part of dealing with drugs in Reading as well. If you could reduce the poverty, do you think that would affect drug use and drug rates?
Well, you're absolutely correct. We know that there is a correlation related to poverty and drug usage. We also know that there's a correlation between drug usage and crime. And all of those things do play a role in our city, like other cities across the state of Pennsylvania. Going back to your previous question, those things come with a cost. And, you know, for us to be able to do all of the things necessary to provide the public safety initiatives and make sure our streets and residents are in a safe environment costs money. And all of those things play a role. Obviously, if you're not working, there's the mental well-being and mental health that people go through. And I think there is a correlation between use of alcohol, use of drugs, poverty, and crime.
And we know certainly the federal government has been cutting back the stimulus of a couple of years ago doesn't much exist anymore. The state government has been cutting back on funding as well. How has that affected Reading?
Well, it's impacting on us a great deal. Let me state it this way. Because of the poverty level and the situations going on in our city with our residents, we all know that the best way out of poverty is through good jobs. And of course, for cities, Rust Belt cities here in Pennsylvania, the Reddings, the Altoonas, the Yorks, Western Pennsylvania, we have to rely a great deal on being able to provide an incentive to get businesses to consider to relocate into our cities. And a lot of that incentive money has been reduced or non-existent over the last 2 years now. When you compare it to the previous administration, which obviously was directing monies to those cities because of the need to rebuild their economies, their local economies. So it's had an impact. Just the fact that we're in Act 47, pre-bankruptcy, it's also had an impact on our ability to have manning levels of police and fire to the levels that previously existed. So, you know, we basically are operating with less officers than we had 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago.
Well, Mayor Spencer, thank you so much for joining us today on Radio Times, getting us started.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity of being able to talk to you and tell the story of Reading a little bit.
Indeed, and that's Mayor Vaughn Spencer, the mayor of Reading, Pennsylvania. And we called him up because the U.S. Conference of Mayors passed a resolution last month telling the federal government essentially that states want to have their own marijuana policies without government interference. We will carry on that conversation after this very short break. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, Wells Fargo, working with the Salvation Army Croc Center to help meet the needs of over 1,000 people a day in Philadelphia. Details on Wells Fargo's work in the community can be found at wellsfargo.com/commitment. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far.
On the next Fresh Air...
14 months ago, you went on the air and called the Tea Party the American Taliban.
I did.
And?
The Taliban resented it.
That's Jeff Daniels as cable news anchor Will McAvoy and Marsha Gay Harden as the network's First Amendment lawyer in Aaron Sorkin's HBO drama The Newsroom. Season 2 begins Sunday. On the next Fresh Air, we feature our interview with Jeff Daniels. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
Some people encourage birds to eat their bad bugs. Others cut to the chase and enjoy insect hors d'oeuvres directly. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next You Bet Your Garden, we'll eat some bugs. Plus, how to get rid of aphids without killing bees and answers to all your growing questions. That's You Bet Your Garden, Saturday morning at 11, right here on WHYY-FM.
Supporting WHYY, the Lincoln Motor Company, featuring a panoramic retractable roof on the 2013 Lincoln MKZ that opens up to over 15 square feet of skylight. More at Lincoln.com.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We noticed a news item recently. The U.S. Conference of Mayors passed a resolution saying that states should have their own marijuana policies without interference from the federal government. This, along with 18 states that have legalized marijuana, medical marijuana, and two states that have legalized it for recreational use, is just another example of changing attitudes towards the drug. The Pew Research Center for the People and the Press released a recent poll saying that 52% of the public believes that marijuana should be legalized. Well, here with us in our Philadelphia studio as we carry on our conversation is Chris Goldstein. He's a longtime marijuana legalization advocate, Philly Normal spokesperson who works with the Coalition for Medical Marijuana in New Jersey, and has a brand new column at philly.com. And Chris Goldstein, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Thanks so much, Marty.
And also with us and just joining us is Seth Williams. He is the district attorney of Philadelphia. And Seth Williams, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty. How are you?
I'm very well. I want to ask you about the SAM program. This is the small amounts of marijuana program that you started in 2010. The idea was to, I guess, take this out of the court system and to deal with these small amounts in a different, unique kind of way. How did it work, or how does it work?
Well, it's working very well. But first and foremost, I believe that we'd be as smart on crime and not just talk tough like prosecutors have for generations. And I believe that we have to treat our drug addiction problem in America as a health policy problem, and to deal with it that way, as opposed to a public health problem, as opposed to dealing with just the criminal law and just arresting people and locking folks up. So we began the small amounts of marijuana program, not to the dismay of some folks thought I was legalizing marijuana.
Well, and we'll get to Chris in just a second.
Right,
yeah, go
but
ahead.
The point was to take people that possessed less than 30 grams of marijuana.
Is that about an ounce?
You know what?
A little more than an ounce, actually.
I can never convert from cups to metrics and back to ounces, so I'm very sorry.
That's why the cannabis consumer is here. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Go ahead.
But the point was that these small amounts of marijuana cases, there are about 7,000 arrests a year. There was almost about 10% of all the arrests that were being made in Philadelphia were for small amounts of marijuana. And they were clogging, in many ways, our municipal court. That's where our misdemeanor cases are heard. And instead of going to court, spending thousands of dollars on analyzing the drugs, the prosecutors, the defense attorneys, the court costs, police standing around getting paid overtime, instead of spending thousands of dollars to prosecute a case which might have possessed about $10 or $15 worth of weed, I wanted to get them out of the criminal justice system, have them pay a fine, and they also have the opportunity to get 3 hours of counseling. Some people believe they are addicted and that maybe they don't want that lifestyle. But for others, pay a fine, keep on moving.
And no criminal record, right?
Exactly, and their records get expunged. And so I think we have been able to expedite a lot of these cases, not clog up our criminal courts, to focus on the more serious crimes. And so that's what the small amounts of marijuana program is, and I think it's been very successful.
Do you think it's been successful, Chris?
It's been a tangible change for cannabis consumers in Philadelphia. I mean, it's certainly a difference from the experience that they had before. But again, even with the SAM program now, Philadelphia stands out from the rest of Pennsylvania in that if you're caught with any amount of marijuana in the city, you get put in handcuffs. It is not a summary violation. You are taken into custody, taken down to 8th and Race, and before you can get into the SAM program, you get put into a holding cell. Now, the rest of Pennsylvania does not do that to people who are cited for a small amount of marijuana, and that's costing the city millions of dollars a year. You know, the ACLU came out with a report that talked about the cost of marijuana prohibition, and they are estimating that Pennsylvania is spending $100 million a year, and that really is kicked down at the city level. It's not like the state police are arresting most of these people. It's Philly cops, it's Reading cops who are doing most of these arrests. So it's $100 million a year that it's costing us just to arrest people for a small amount of marijuana. And that's what we want to see change.
Well, let me just pick up on the handcuff part. I'm just curious your response to what Chris said about that. Or is this a police issue?
Well, that's a police procedure and protocol matter, but it still is a violation of the Crimes Code of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania to possess marijuana. And so as such, the police have the absolute right to conduct an arrest, and that's their protocol. Now, it's different in Pittsburgh, I understand. I don't know. I haven't done a 67 county survey of how each county does it. I don't think we're not alone in that people are arrested. But that's a police protocol. The people are arrested. A background check is done to see if they're wanted for a felony in Georgia. And then if they possess a de minimis amount, which is 30 grams or less, they're allowed to be in our SAM program. And so, but 30 grams, the maximum penalty, if they were to go to trial, would be 30 days of incarceration. Mm. But the reality is no one goes to jail for just the possession in Pennsylvania, in Philadelphia, for just the possession of marijuana. Yeah. People do go, they're put on probation, and then if they violate probation, then sometimes, yes, sometimes people then are incarcerated for the violation. I can't argue with that.
Can you argue with that, Chris?
Yeah, people do end up in jail because of marijuana and because of a small amount of marijuana all the time. And the idea that, again, we don't define people who use marijuana with addiction. It's actually dependence. So the idea that you're going to offer some support for this, we don't really have the science around that. It's one of the biggest problems of prohibition is that we don't really know how to deal with these things on that level. We want to change it to a public health level, but we need more research and we need more of a pragmatic stance to do it. Yeah, people go to jail all the time. Getting caught with a small amount of pot has consequences for you down the road later, and that's why making it a summary violation or decriminalizing it, as they have in 18 other states, mm-hmm. that's why that should be an option here.
But do you see the SAM program as a step towards decriminalizing it? I mean, in that even if you're guilty, you don't get it. It put on your criminal
well,
record.
Well, you know, I'm promoting many diversionary programs to help low-level, nonviolent people. We have a program called Dawn Court, which is for women that are sex workers, to help them get the help they need to deal with the trauma of the lifestyle they've been in and then to move on and have their records expunged. So I promote many diversionary programs, but I'm not a lawmaker.
Right.
It's up to the public to push their members of the General Assembly to change anything that's in the crimes code. I swore an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States, the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, and the Home Rule Charter of Philadelphia, nothing more, nothing less. And so, again, that might be, I don't disagree, you know, the public opinion is changed, and it changes on many different topics as time progresses, and it's up to people to push their lawmakers to change any law that they have a problem with. But, you know, you were talking about the U.S. Conference of Mayors
yes.
and what they voted on.
Yes.
And, you know, just one issue that your listeners need to understand is that the Constitution of the United States is very clear that when there is a conflict between state law and federal law supersedes state law. And so that will also require people pushing members of the House and the Senate to change any rules that they think at the federal level are in conflict with their desire to blaze.
Well, I wasn't sure how you were going to end that sentence.
Well, and we do that. You know, we were just in Washington, D.C. We met with Congressman Rush Holt. We went with the congressional delegation of New Jersey. We ran into congressmen from all over the country. Jared Polis from Colorado is sponsoring H.R. 499, which would actually remove marijuana from the Controlled Substances Act completely, not just reschedule it, but get it out of the CSA, which is really the tangible language of marijuana legalization. And it's up before Congress right now.
Well, you know what I find confusing, and I think a lot of people do, and I'll put this to both of you, which is that President Obama, as we know, was a pot smoker when he was a younger man. And he said in an interview, this is in December, and I'm quoting here, it does not make sense from a prioritization.
Yeah.
Thank you. Point of view for us to focus on recreational drug users in a state that has already said that under state law that's legal. And then a couple months later, Attorney General Eric Holder says we're going to enforce the federal law. So we're getting this, I'll put this to you, Chris, this kind of mixed message from, you know, the head law enforcement person in this country and the President of the United States.
Yeah, we've had that mixed message all throughout the Obama administration, unfortunately. And we've seen that played out with medical marijuana, where states that have legalized the regulation of medical marijuana have seen federal authorities come in and enforce and raid these facilities. We've seen the IRS go after bank accounts. The state of Colorado right now is attempting to pass a law so that bank institutions can get involved with the legal marijuana industry. So yes, the president himself was a cannabis consumer. We're meeting out, you know, we're having protests at the Liberty Bell once a month here in Philadelphia just to bring this to the attention of the federal government. As much as President Obama says that a small amount of marijuana isn't on his radar, when we announce that we're going to smoke a joint at the Liberty Bell, ago, we've seen 100 members of Department of Homeland Security, National Park Service, Philly Police come out in response to that. So they take this rather seriously. So seriously that they're willing to spend those overtime resources on DHS agents coming out. But this is the real problem of prohibition, is the priority. There are a lot of laws on the books. There are a million laws on the books. Why do police need to come down so hard on cannabis consumers every day? I think this is getting to the level of discrimination. People use marijuana for medical use. That's well documented. It's well accepted. And they use it for bettering their lives. Coming down on them for using it is getting to the level of state discrimination.
You have a quizzical look on your face, Seth Williams.
I would just say, though, I think that the Department of Homeland Security would send a lot of staff around Independence Hall if there's 100 people gathering for any topic.
Oh, that's not true. We didn't have that in the past.
So we can disagree to disagree. But
yes.
Speaking on my own, I have not equivocated since I've been the district attorney that the possession, the sale of narcotics, all the schedules is illegal. And people will be punished. Just I've changed how we handle de minimis amounts of marijuana, I think in a pragmatic way, because I have limited resources. And the citizens of Philadelphia want me to focus on people that are being shot and robbed and raped. And I'm doing that. And I'm trying to handle people that possess small amounts of drugs, not only in marijuana, but in a way that addresses the public health issues of getting those help that are dependent or addicted so that they can have lives that don't spiral down a toilet.
Let me quote something from the ACLU. Then I do want to get some callers in. This is a relatively new report. The headline, a new ACLU report finds overwhelming racial bias in marijuana arrests. Black people are 3.7 times more likely to be arrested for marijuana possession than white people, despite comparable usage rates. And this was something recently from the ACLU. Does that also complicate what you do, Seth Williams?
Well, again, I wouldn't disagree with those numbers. I know that, you know, about 50% of all the drug users are in the suburbs. But I'm the district attorney of Philadelphia. I'm going to try to make sure that we handle things justly and fairly within my jurisdiction. But I clearly understand that the history and maybe the current practices in the criminal justice system are not racially blind.
Chris, you want to add to that? Then we'll get to our callers. Yeah, go ahead. I wasn't sure how I was going to end that sentence either, but yes, go ahead.
Well, and I want to give the district attorney a lot of credit for the SAM program. Again, for cannabis consumers in Philadelphia, this has been a big difference for them when they do get arrested or they do get caught out there on the streets. But the racial bias in Philadelphia in marijuana enforcement is striking. 80% of the arrests in Philadelphia for pot are black men for the most part. And that is a real problem. 30 people are going to get arrested today, 300 people this month, 4,000 people this year, right here in the city of Philadelphia. 80% of them are going to be black cannabis consumers. I mean, we have Phish concerts here. We have Rolling Stones concerts. Have you ever been to the early morning comics at the Mummers Parade? Cannabis is part of the fabric of this city amongst all colors, amongst all classes. It's not about being poor. It's not about being rich. It's not about being black or white. Marijuana is part of a great fabric of this community, and that's why we want it legalized. That's why we want to have less punishment against cannabis consumers in this country. It really is clogging up our system overall, and police in Philadelphia are spending a tremendous amount of time and energy on it.
You want to add to that, and then we'll get to our callers.
No, I have nothing.
Okay, and that's Chris Goldstein. He's a longtime marijuana legalization advocate. Also with us is Seth Williams, the district attorney of Philadelphia, and we are talking about marijuana, and we began by talking about the U.S. Conference of Mayors passing a resolution recently that states should have their own marijuana policies, essentially saying to the federal government, stay out of our marijuana policies, and we are taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We have David from Cheltenham joining us on Radio Times. And David, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. My name is David Scott, as was said. I'm vice president and chair of the Legal Redress Committee for the Cheltenham area branch of the NAACP. But I'm also a retired deputy chief with the SEPTA Police Department, having served a total of 31 years in law enforcement. And Cheltenham NAACP is the only NAACP chapter in Pennsylvania to adopt a resolution. But we actually had a press conference with Pennsylvania State Senator Dalen Leach on Tuesday, June the 25th, in support of his Regulate Marijuana Act, Bill number 528. And now the war on drugs, as was stated earlier, has had a devastating effect on the African-American community. And it was stated in the ACLU report, as well as in a resolution that the national NAACP passed in 2011. So the Cheltenham Area Branch NAACP is calling for the Pennsylvania State Conference of the NAACP to also adopt a similar resolution. We have some 75 chapters in Pennsylvania. And we're also calling for the Pennsylvania Legislative Black Caucus to adopt a resolution in support of Senator Leach's bill.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. And I know Senator Leach has authored a bill. Perhaps I can put that to you, Chris. Essentially trying to treating marijuana like alcohol.
Very much. It's tax and regulate. And in a state that is privatizing its liquor system right now, it's a pretty interesting debate, honestly. Again, marijuana is out there every day. People are growing it. They're selling it. They're using it. And it's part of an underground economy. Legalizing marijuana is really bringing this underground economy into the light so that it can better benefit all of us. And yes, Senate Bill 528 would tax and regulate marijuana, much in the way that the state stores run alcohol here in Pennsylvania right now. There's also a medical marijuana bill that's been sponsored by Representative Mark Cohen. So there is active legislation in Pennsylvania, as there is in Washington, D.C. There are bills for medical marijuana, for legalization, for decriminalization, all in Washington, D.C. right now. And NAACP is a great supporter. Alice Huffman and at the California NAACP, also a great supporter of marijuana legalization. And I think we're going to see more and more of that. This has had a tremendous impact on people of color.
Do you see decriminalization and legalization differently, Seth Williams?
A little bit. But one, I just want to say I think that Senator Leach is to be commended. You know, I'm also a big fan of his. He promotes funding for early childhood education, which I would love to talk to you for hours about how that dramatically affects crime, the lack thereof. But, you know, I think this is something that's very, it's great for the conversation. And I think he's pushing the discussion where a lot of people would be afraid to do so. But yeah, there is a difference between decriminalization and legalization. Decriminalization generally is just law enforcement not wanting to, for lack of a better word, just do its job, do what's on the book, and just kind of looking the other way. But there's a lot of discretion that is given to the police and to the district attorney. The most powerful person in the criminal justice system is that police officer that pulls you over. Are they going to take that can of beer out of your hand as if you're a kid that's underage drinking, walking down the street, and pour it down the sewer and tell you to go home or take you to your parents? Or are they going to arrest you? And so the police officer on the street has the most discretion, and the prosecutor has a lot of discretion to deal with things. But, you know, Senator Leach is right. I think there should be a debate, and let the people decide.
Well, let's take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. That's Seth Williams. He's the district attorney of Philadelphia, along with Chris Goldstein. He's a longtime marijuana legalization advocate. Philly Normal spokesperson has a new column at philly.com about marijuana. I understand Governor Corbett on one side of the philly.com and you on the other. Stay with us. Much more after this short break. We'll be right back.
Hello, I'm Russell Kaufman, president of the Wistar Institute, a proud supporter of WHYY. For over 100 years, Wistar scientists have helped keep your families, friends, and employees healthy because of our research that guides the creation of early-stage drugs. We then work with the pharmaceutical industry for their final production. Our name may not be on these cancer drugs, but our fingerprints are all over them. To learn more about how Wistar keeps you healthy and our region economically strong, online at wistar.org.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. Next time on Here and Now, the defense rests in the Bradley Manning court-martial. The Army private is accused of giving thousands of classified documents to WikiLeaks. We'll bring you up to date on that. Plus, Stephen King's Under the Dome TV show is shaking up summer TV. It's all next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
Nearly 29,000 prisoners on hunger strike in California, a protest against solitary confinement.
They do everything alone. They have no meaningful human contact.
From the cell block to the Supreme Court, the ongoing fight over prison conditions in California. That's next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Well, I have to say they're very interesting off-the-air conversation between our two guests, Chris Goldstein and Seth Williams, and we are talking about a very important and serious subject, and this has to do with marijuana. And as I said at the very beginning of the hour, the U.S. Conference of Mayors has passed a resolution saying that states and municipalities within states should have their own marijuana policies. They don't want the federal government to interfere as it has in the past, and it has raised a whole host of interesting questions about the legalization of marijuana, about the decriminalization. And as we know, something like 52% of the public wants it to be legalized. Almost half of the public has used marijuana, including the President of the United States. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. We want to know where you stand on this particular issue. I know, Seth, your job is to enforce the laws. You don't
Correct.
Write the laws. But nonetheless, it must be difficult when especially when it comes to marijuana, knowing how popular it is, how the public's view is changing on that. We've got, 18 states that have medical marijuana,
Correct.
Two that allow small amounts of recreational marijuana, to enforce a law that essentially is broken by so many people.
Right. Well, you know, I was here in your studio discussing this matter with you shortly after becoming the district attorney in 2010 when I created the Small Amounts of Marijuana program. And some people who heard this or read about it in the paper, oh, we elect the first black DA and he must be a Rasta and he's just legalizing pot. And it was funny when I attended a District Attorneys Association conference here in Pennsylvania right after that. What we were doing here in Philadelphia as it relates to small amounts of marijuana isn't novel. It's not some super crazy thing. Many district attorneys in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in parts that are much redder, shall we say, than the bluest of blue Philadelphia, are doing this. It's just the correct thing in many ways when you look at the criminal justice system, the limited resources we have, the recidivism rates for people, who's violent, who's nonviolent, how can you best address these people once they've been arrested? And that's really my goal.
Well, and what's interesting, Chris, even looking at this resolution from the U.S. Conference of Mayors, and they say over and over again, which is that mayors are on the front line. I mean, many in a poor city like Philadelphia, a mayor and I guess a DA and others, police commissioner, on the front line.
They are on the front line, and they're on the front line of a tremendous amount of expense, too. Again, marijuana arrests, as much as we've changed in the court system, make up a huge portion of the drug arrests and the overall arrests in Philadelphia right now. And again, you can get away from that in Colorado and in Washington. And now residents of our area can travel to those states. Maybe they're going to go to Denver on business and they're going to experience their legalized marijuana. And then they're going to come back here into what is essentially a police state here when it comes
to
cannabis.
Is that how you see it?
You know, it is when it comes to prohibition. I mean, Philadelphia and New Jersey are probably the harshest environments in New York City, probably the harshest environments in the country when it comes to marijuana prohibition policy. People suffer the worst here at the highest level. Again, Pennsylvania is going to spend $100 million on busting pot smokers. New Jersey is going to spend $120 million. Yes, from the view of anybody who consumes cannabis for medicine or for recreation, it is a police state. And it's a very harsh one at that.
Do you – I mean, let me ask you, only because the mayor of Reading said he saw marijuana as a gateway drug.
Yeah, it's certainly not a gateway drug. And we've heard even here today the idea that you're going to have a problem with it, you're going to flush your life down the toilet. I'd like to bring up a couple of examples. Michael Phelps, of course, one of the gold medal winning athletes of all time, cannabis consumer. Carl Sagan, also one of the greatest scientists and a PBS host for a long time, billions and billions of stars, also a well-known cannabis consumer. The truth is that people who use marijuana are doing great things for society every single day. They are our family members. They are our neighbors. And just because they use cannabis, they shouldn't be treated like criminals. The whole point of compassionate use laws with medical marijuana in New Jersey, it's failing right now. The one dispensary that Chris Christie has allowed has closed to patients at this point. There is no medical marijuana in New Jersey. So we could say we could pass laws, and I like the idea of working with legislators, but we're seeing in New Jersey Jersey is that they're twisting these laws around. So, yes, we can have a medical marijuana law, and we can call New Jersey a medical marijuana state, but people with AIDS and cancer can't get legal cannabis. So what's the point of the law at that point, and how much is the government changing their game to uphold prohibition?
But, I mean, there are people that struggle with alcohol. I mean, not everyone who drinks alcohol is a Carl Sagan or somebody. I mean, there are people who are casualties of some of these substances.
I'm not here to say that cannabis dependence doesn't exist, because it does.
Right.
And if people do feel that they have a problem with cannabis, they should seek out some help. And usually that help is talk therapy. It is not the kind of treatment that you get for an alcoholic or a heroin addict. New Jersey, the state of New Jersey, is seeking to use taxpayer dollars as a mandatory program to send those caught with cannabis into inpatient drug treatment. This is the wrong approach.
Go ahead, Seth Williams.
I think we need to need to address it more as a public health problem, need to ensure that young children don't become addicted to any drugs, be it become addicted to alcohol or cannabis. And until the laws change in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, I would just suggest to people that if your hobby could result in you getting arrested, you should probably just get a different hobby.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's certainly easier said than done. I mean, cannabis isn't a hobby.
You said it's not addictive. You said it's not a dependent, so it shouldn't be that hard. If it's a hobby that's going to get you arrested and causes all the taxpayers all this money.
I don't know how
do
many
something
other,
else. Go fly a kite. Do something that's relaxing. Smoke a cigar. I don't know.
For not everyone, it's a hobby, District Attorney. For a lot of people, it's a matter of life and death, and it's a matter of contributing to their treatment. And again, you know, we're out here protesting at the Liberty Bell. You know, the preamble in the Declaration of Independence says that we can form our government for our safety and happiness, and that when a government forms destructively against its people, we have the right. We're empowered with this unquestionable right to change it. And we've tried for 75 years. We've tried to change federal policy, state policy, city policy. But now we're at the point where cannabis prohibition is really institutional. And again, Seth talked about the discretion amongst police. I mean, that's why this racial disparity is getting real confusing, because there is a lot of discretion there at the street level. And why is that discretion playing out in a racial disparity here on the street?
You want to pick up on that?
We discussed this a little bit off air.
I know, but it was a very interesting discussion.
And it's
just
ahead. Sure, there are a lot of disparities for all types of things. But I think what's important, just to identify so your listeners don't not hear this, okay, is that, you know, the majority – this is just anecdotal information. I don't have the actual statistics, but just from my own experience and what police officers tell me, they handle narcotics. You know, the majority of people that ingest cocaine or crack or heroin generally do it in the confines of something, in their home, somewhere. And that people who consume marijuana, a greater percentage of them do it in public, do it out in the open, which I think is part of the reason why more people that smoke marijuana are arrested, and that in Philadelphia, a lot of them that do get arrested, and my counterpart here, Ms. Goldstein, talked about African-American males. Yeah, the police are doing all they can to ensure public safety in the most violent neighborhoods, and unfortunately, there's a disparate number of African-Americans, black and brown men, that live in those neighborhoods, and often, you know, my goal is to save people, to ensure the black and brown men aren't being shot. And often, you know, the police pull up and see people when they're smoking pot, and they arrest those folks. And often, you know, that arrest might have prevented something else from happening as well.
This is the key, though. This situation is really key. Because, again, black and brown people are smoking marijuana on the streets of Philadelphia every day. Police want a safer community, just as you say. And you want to stop people from getting shot. Well, we also have a stop snitching culture here in Philadelphia, too, where there isn't a great community relationship with police. And if you're out there busting people for smoking a blunt out on the street, well, that same person who's smoking a joint out there might have seen a more violent crime and might have witnessed a shooting. And if you're out there hustling them for their single joint or their dime bag or their blunt, and you're arresting them just for that all the time, what chance do you have for them to have a relationship with police and tell them about more violent crime they witnessed while they were smoking a joint.
But part of the problem is that we're talking about something that is illegal. Whether you like it or not,
again,
it is illegal.
It may be illegal, but there are a lot of things illegal in Philadelphia. It is about priority. And if the police department wants a relationship with its community and it recognizes that a lot of people in these neighborhoods smoke marijuana in public, trying to bust them all on a corner is not creating a relationship with the community.
What do you think, Seth?
Arresting people that are smoking pot isn't something that I meet with the police commissioner routinely. He meets with highest levels of police and prosecutors to talk about the most violent crimes. People are being shot. People are being raped. Those are things that are talked about at GunStat, at CompStat, not knuckleheads that are out there just smoking pot while they're waiting for a 46 bus on 60th Street. But I've never been a police officer. I've never been shot at or yelled at because I'm wearing a blue shirt. I'm going to leave to those people how to best do their job when it comes to keeping public order on the street, people off of corners when they've told them to get off the corners. That's for the police to do.
But do you think this whole marijuana issue is a kind of a sideshow? I mean, here we are in Philadelphia, you know, has a bunch of different problems. Certainly crime is a big problem,
right,
in this
and
city.
And that's why I'm trying to address what I can address for people that possess small amounts. Now, if you have a lot, or if you're selling it, I mean, people that are selling large quantities of marijuana or drugs, there's a lot of violence that is surrounding that. People that are consider themselves just recreational cannabis users, though, are part of a very, very large economy that includes a lot of violence.
Yeah, what do you think, Chris?
Well, here in Philadelphia, we've seen plenty of members of the Philadelphia Police Department get busted by federal authorities for selling marijuana. I mean, prohibition and this underground market...
Which doesn't make it right. I mean,
No. But that's my point, is that the idea that the underground market exists corrupts the police. And it is a real problem with corruption in police departments around the country. I mean, we've got Camden, New Jersey, right across the river. It's a high-intensity drug trafficking area by the federal government. There are plenty of DEA officers over there. It's a city of 85,000 people. It's essentially a giant open-air drug market. And those same federal officers have to come over to Philadelphia to bust Philly police for selling marijuana. I mean, we are in such a tough point of cannabis prohibition in America that this policy really demands attention. I mean, this is 4,000 arrests a year in Philadelphia. Why isn't Commissioner Ramsey having a meeting about this? I mean, this is a serious portion of crime in the city.
Do you agree? You agree with that? In the big scheme of things?
I mean, you mix a lot of different apples and oranges and say, I just can't refute each point by point, because we'd be here for a long time. But
now you know how I feel sometimes.
Camden and Philadelphia are both part of the same intensive drug enforcement area. I was the chairperson of it 2 years ago. Zane Meminger, the U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Pennsylvania, is the current chairman. But the question earlier was, you know, about police work and what they're doing. So I do not disagree that this is a topic that the public needs to have, that lawmakers are the ones that can affect change. But when it comes to law enforcement, us enforcing what's on the books, I'm going to do my job. I'm going to try and do it as well as possible, but I'm going to also consider what is in the best interest of the individual that's arrested, society as a whole, and balance that also with the realities of a budget, that my budget is smaller than it used to be. Our budget is smaller than it was in 2008. The mayor proposed a budget for us that was smaller than last year. So that's the reality in which I live. And so I'm trying to do what's best for the individual, for society, and not increasing the taxpayers' burden.
You know, there is this organization called LEAP. It's called Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, to use Chris's words here. And it's made up of I guess, former police officers, prosecutors, and judges. Basically saying what Chris is saying. I realize because of your position, there are certain things you can and cannot say, but I'm curious about what you think of this organization.
Well, this is the first I've heard of it. You know, so I respect people who have opinions from the far left to the far right, and everyone's opportunity to exercise their right of free speech. I have no problem with that. I'm not a member of that organization. Not that I would never think of talking to people and learning more and being open-minded. But right now I'm trying to do all that I can so that we handle people that possess small amounts in a more progressive way, that we try to deal with people that are addicted to whatever substance, that they get help so they don't, you know, because people who are crack addicts, being a crack addict and people that are trying to feed that addiction lead to a lot of criminal behavior in the city of Philadelphia. So we have to help people when they first get arrested to get into treatment. I tell people everywhere I go, you know, if you want to help me reduce crime, get a family member, a coworker that's addicted, get them into rehab. Mm. That will help me more than you jumping on the back of a crack dealer on a corner.
We're almost out of time here, but do you see things, though, changing, Chris? I mean, again, we've got 18 states that have legalized medical marijuana with varying differences.
Yeah, absolutely. Things are changing today. Public perception is changing. People are much more comfortable with it. It's part, again, marijuana has always been part of American culture. It's been part of music. It's been part of movies and television. It's been part of all of our daily lives. Is the opinion changing? Are the political winds changing? Definitely. You know, being down in Washington, D.C. a few weeks ago and seeing some of the congressional delegation in person, you know, most of the New Jersey congressional delegation has voted in favor of federal legislation for medical marijuana. I was surprised to learn that, quite frankly. They're quietly changing around out there. But the real question is, as we sort of push towards success on this issue, how hard is the government going to push back? And we're seeing that in other places. Is the federal government going to try and stop Washington, Colorado? We hope not. We've got the momentum of the public behind us, so we're going to keep going for it.
And you have a summit, a donut summit, what, in a couple of hours. Just very briefly tell us about that.
Yeah,
we have to say goodbye.
In fact, this is the world of Twitter. Cannabis activists in Philadelphia are going to meet with the chief of SEPTA police, Thomas Nestel, and a Department of Homeland Security officer for the first cannabis activist cop donut summit at Dunkin' Donuts at 7th and Market. And this is just
at what time?
This is going to be 2 p.m. today,
2 p.m.
as a matter of fact. And this is just to diffuse a little bit, but this is how folks are coming together on this issue, I think.
Well, Chris Goldstein, thank you for joining us today on Radio Time. Seth Williams, thank you very
much. It's
always
a pleasure to be with you and your listeners, Marty.
Nice to have you both here. And go to whyy.org/radiotimes, and you can find out much more about this program. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of the show, produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, and Debbie Builder with Sophie Reed. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.